Today is Wednesday, May 14th, 2025. Welcome to the award-winning Personal Computer Show. I'm Hank Key. Big Tech has been collecting and aggregating your personal data. Do you know how big tech companies and our government are using your personal data? We have been bringing computer news, hardware and software reviews, guest interviews, and news of user group meetings for the past 40-plus years. The Personal Computer Show is a three-time winner of the prestigious National Computer Press Awards. Our only advocacies are consumerism and the First Amendment. I welcome you, the listeners, to provide feedback as to what you want to hear. Address your suggestions to Hank at pcradioshow.org. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.live, that's PRN.live, streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of the program is available on PRN.live on the Internet. You can leave us a message with your questions or comment at hank@pcradioshow.org. Microsoft forces automatic Windows 11 24H2 update on Pro and Home PCs. Microsoft has confirmed that the Windows 11 version 24H2 update is now in its final rollout phase and will soon be delivered automatically to millions of home and pro users around the world. As of May 2, 2025, any unmanaged device running Windows 11 versions 21H2, 22H2, or 23H2, or even Windows 10 will see the 2024 update download in the background. After the download completes, users can choose then when to install the update or postpone it by going to Settings, then Windows Update. This release introduces a variety of useful improvements. File Explorer search has become more intuitive. The Clock app now includes focus sessions to help you stay on task, and Snap layouts provide greater flexibility when organizing open windows. If you own a Copilot Plus PC, you will continue to receive additional AI-powered features and stages. These releases start within the Windows Insider community and may differ depending on your device's processor and region. Although automatic delivery makes it easier to stay current, devices with limited storage may struggle if the update files consume too much space. To avoid disruptions, Windows Update offers a 4-week postponement option. Should you need more time, you can use command line tools or adjust local policies to stop or block the update permanently. Microsoft has published a detailed list of known issues and safeguard holds alongside the rollout information. For example, Azure virtual desktop users who experience app attach failures will see those problems fixed, and remote desktop freezes caused by the January 2025 preview update have been resolved. At the same time, devices running certain Direct, that's DIRAC audio drivers, sprotect.sys applications, or outdated Easy Anti-Cheat or Intel Smart Sound Technology drivers will not receive the update until compatible versions become available. Some wallpaper customization and camera-dependent apps may also encounter temporary glitches while patches are prepared. IT administrators looking for programmatic access to update health data can use the Windows Updates API in Microsoft Graph. For immediate assistance with update issues, open the Get Help app or visit the Microsoft Support website. Amazon ends work from home. What does this mean for tech professionals? Amazon has officially drawn the line. No more remote work flexibility. Employees are now expected to return to the office if they want to thrive, grow, and stay visible in the company. CEO Andy Jassy emphasizes that promotions, mentorship, and rewards will lean heavily toward those present in the office. Remote workers risk being overlooked. Amazon argues that innovations happen through spontaneous office interactions, casual chats, and messy meetings that remote setups simply cannot replicate. This, they believe, is essential for strong company culture. Performance-based pay adjustments, such as long-term top performers, can now earn up to 110% of their pay range. First-time achievers, however, will receive only 70%, down from 80%, signaling a stronger reward for loyalty and consistency. Restructuring the workforce, Amazon is reducing management layers to favor more hands-on contributors. It's a shift toward leaner, performance-driven teams. Lifestyle impacts for the employees. For those who relocated during remote years, the mandate means relocation, longer commutes, and adapting daily routines. Being visible in the office is now a career imperative. Well, how can tech employees adapt? Adjust your schedule. Rework your day to fit commute and in-office hours. Be visible. Participate actively in meetings and team initiatives. Network strategically. Build relationships with mentors and peers. Upskill continuously. Stay relevant through learning and development. And prioritize well-being. Don't neglect mental and physical health in the transition. Amazon's move may set a precedent for other tech giants. For tech professionals, work from home is no longer the default, and success will now hinge on how well they can adapt to a re-onboarding into office culture. Apple's executive says it is considering injecting Safari with AI. Eddie Q said that the number of Google searches in Safari fell for the first time ever this year. Apple's Senior Vice President of Services, Eddie Q, said that the company is actively looking at bringing AI search options to its Safari web browser. Q also said he believes that AI search engines will eventually replace standard search engines like Google. Q's comments came as he testified in the remedies phase of the Google's antitrust trial in Washington. The Apple executive also shared that the number of Google searches made on Safari decreased for the first time ever this year. He attributed the change to the rise of AI search engines. That has never happened in 22 years, he emphasized. Safari was released in early 2003, while Q says that AI search technology isn't ready to be rolled out on Safari. He did say that the company has already had conversations with OpenAI, Perplexity, and Anthropic. Last August, Apple announced a partnership with OpenAI to bring ChatGPT to some of its products. But Q says he wanted to make sure we have the capability to switch if we have to, in case to another company, distinguish itself as a leader in AI search. Executives from a range of tech companies, including Yahoo, Microsoft, and OpenAI, are expected to testify during the remedies phase of this trial, which kicked off last month. Apple's testimony is particularly relevant to Google's fate because the search company pays Apple around $20 billion a year to be the default search engine on Safari. Under this agreement with Google, Apple receives a portion of Google's ad revenue from searches on Safari. During his testimony on Wednesday, Q said he lost a lot of sleep over the idea of losing the revenue share. Google is currently the defendant in two separate antitrust suits filed by the Department of Justice. Today's testimony was part of the trial that emerged from the Justice Department's 2020 lawsuit against Google. That suit alleges that Google illegally maintained a monopoly on search and search advertising markets. A central argument in the DOJ's case was that the exclusivity agreements Google struck with certain platforms providers, like Apple, to become the default browser on their tools were illegally monopolistic. Last August, Judge Amit B. Mehta of the U.S. District Court of the District of Washington, D.C., ruled against Google in the trial. While Google has said it plans to appeal the verdict, the action will have to wait until the remedies phase of the trial is complete. Separately, a 2023 suit filed by the DOJ against Google argues that the search giant illegally monopolized the digital ad tech market. Last month, Google was found guilty of two of the three charges brought against it. Google also plans to appeal this ruling. Accusations of Meta manipulating children with addictive features on Instagram. Neither the First Amendment nor Section 230 protects Meta from accusations of manipulating children with addictive features on Instagram. A Massachusetts appeals court had just said no to Meta. Mark Zuckerberg's company had requested the dismissal of a class action lawsuit accusing it of causing child addiction with its Instagram platform. But the court not only rejected the request, it opened the door to one of the most important trials that could define the responsibility of social media over the mental health of the youngest users. The state attorney general, Andra Joy Campbell, accuses Meta of having designed Instagram to hook younger users with a clear purpose: to create addicts. According to the lawsuit, features carried out on Instagram, such as infinite scroll, autoplay, or the absence of real age verification, are not accidental, but strategies designed to capture attention, generate dependency, and take advantage of the emotional vulnerability of children and teenagers. It is not a content problem. It is how the app works. Unlike other lawsuits, here is not about what the users publish. The problem, says the prosecution, lies in the very design of the platform, in how Instagram was built to be addictive, especially for minors. Meta tried to have the case dismissed by arguing two things: that they were protected by Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, which shields platforms from lawsuits over third-party content, by invoking the First Amendment to claim that this amendment protects users' freedom of expression. But the court did not accept their arguments, as they consider that this case is not about user posts, but about corporate decisions made about the application and about how Meta lied about its risk. So the trial moves forward. According to Andra Joy Campbell, while Instagram has been sold as a safe place for young people, Meta's own internal documents told a different story. The complaint says the company's executives minimized the problem in interviews, knowing that the platform seriously affected the mental health of minors. Teenagers spend hours on Instagram and get trapped on the platform, spending hours constantly comparing themselves, idealizing bodies and lives that are impossible. The result? Anxiety, depression, body image disorders, eating disorders, and even social isolation. A disorder has even been cataloged called selfie dysphoria, where children do not accept their real faces simply because they want to look like they do with filters. They are just children who should be playing, laughing as always, and instead are going to psychologists to treat these kinds of problems. Are social networks even good for adults? It is possible that Meta executives will have to testify and that internal documents we do not yet know about could come to light. If Meta loses, it could not only face multi-million dollar fines, it could also be forced to change the design of Instagram. And at the same time, it would put pressure on other platforms like TikTok, Snapchat, or YouTube, which have similar formats. What happens with this lawsuit against Meta could change many things in the digital world we know today. For millions of families concerned about the impact of social media on their children, it could be the opportunity to start setting clear limits on a field that until now no one has dared to enter. Meta is no longer about personal relationships. Mark Zuckerberg admits he no longer connects family and friends as he faces FTC's lawsuit that could dismantle Meta. Zuckerberg has had to defend himself in a trial that could redefine the history of digital business. The U.S. Federal Trade Commission, that's the FTC, has taken Meta, the parent company, to court, accusing them of eliminating competition through killer acquisitions, buying the competition to shut it down. That's exactly the case here, and Zuckerberg might have to say goodbye to his last two purchases, WhatsApp and Instagram. How legal is it to buy your competitors so they won't outshine you? That's for a judge to decide. This trial has been open since April the 14th, and it has revealed some incredible facts, such as that the purchase of those last two social networks, WhatsApp for $1 billion and Instagram for $19 billion, could be an illegal strategy. On the stand, Zuckerberg himself admitted that Facebook is no longer serves its original purpose to connect with family and friends. During his testimony, Mark Zuckerberg admitted that the social network that made him a billionaire is no longer what it used to be. Today, he explained, Meta is no longer about personal relationships. Meta is focused on content, discovering viral trends, and following global conversations. He said it himself, what used to be a platform to share a picture of your cat and distant relatives or childhood classmates is now a showcase where the algorithm is in charge. The trial also focused a lot on Meta's two most controversial acquisitions, Instagram in the year 2012 and WhatsApp in the year 2014. Zuckerberg defended both decisions. He said those platforms wouldn't have survived without Meta's investment, and now they're essential tools for billions of people. Basically, his argument was, we didn't destroy them, we made them bigger. The FTC's accusations are that Meta's strategy is to eliminate competition. During the trial, internal emails were shown where Zuckerberg described Instagram as a terrifying threat that had to be neutralized at all costs. A rejected $6 billion offer to Snap in 2013 was also revealed, which, according to prosecutors, proved a systemic policy of eliminating rivals. Was this then a strategy to get rid of the competition? Naturally, the ghost of monopoly is hanging over them. Since they have 2 billion direct users between WhatsApp and Instagram alone, with these two companies generating more than half of Meta's advertising revenue. Meta insists it's not a monopoly. Platforms like TikTok, Reddit, YouTube, and X, which was formerly Twitter, are cited as direct competition. The company also reminds everyone that all of its acquisitions were legally approved at the time. And of course, undoing them now would just be changing the rules of the tech game. The trial will extend until July of this year, 2025. If the FTC wins this first phase, a second and even tougher stage would begin, aiming to argue that forcing Meta to sell Instagram and WhatsApp would directly benefit competition and consumers. Basically, the future of how large digital platforms work, if Meta loses, it wouldn't be surprising if other giants like Google or Amazon start facing similar lawsuits. Pressure against big tech isn't new, but this time the one on the ropes is Mark Zuckerberg, and this time there's no like button for him. The European Union fines Apple for hindering music streaming competition. Apple has been fined nearly $2 billion by the European Union for hindering competition in the music streaming market. This penalty marks the EU's first antitrust action against Apple, highlighting significant concerns regarding its practices in the digital marketplace. The EU decision stems from Apple's unfair practices that favors its own music streaming service over competitors like Spotify. Specifically, Apple restricted these rivals from informing users about alternative payment options available outside of the iOS App Store. This restriction effectively forced users to pay a 30% fee when making purchases through the app, which is a significant barrier for competing services. This ruling is a critical step in the European Union's ongoing efforts to regulate large tech companies and ensure fair competition in the digital economy. The fine not only impacts Apple's financial standing, but also sets a precedent for how App Store's policy can affect competition among digital services. The nearly $2 billion fine imposed on Apple is not the largest fine ever issued by the European Union. The record for the largest fine belongs to Google, which was fined approximately $5.1 billion for antitrust violations related to its Android operating system. This fine was part of a series of penalties that the EU has levied against Google for various anti-competitive practices. In comparison, Apple's fine, while significant, ranks low in the context of EU antitrust fines. The nearly $2 billion fine imposed on Apple by the European Union for hindering competition in the music streaming market carries several significant implications. The fine highlights the EU's stance against Apple's restrictive App Store policies, particularly its 30% commission fee and the prohibition on rivals like Spotify from informing users about cheaper subscription options outside the App Store. This ruling may force Apple to reconsider its App Store policy, not just in Europe, but globally to avoid further regulatory scrutiny. This case marks the first antitrust penalty against Apple by the EU, signaling a broader effort to regulate dominant tech companies and to ensure fair competition in digital markets. It sets a precedent for how the EU might handle similar cases involving other tech giants. By addressing Apple's anti-competitive practices, the ruling could empower competitors like Spotify to operate on a more level playing field. It may also encourage other companies to challenge restrictive practices by dominant platforms. Apple has stated its intention to appeal the decision. This could lead to prolonged legal battles, creating uncertainty about the final outcome and the broader implications for App Store regulations. If upheld, the ruling could benefit consumers by increasing transparency and potentially lowering subscription costs for music streaming services. Competitors would be able to inform users about alternative payment methods that bypass Apple's fees, leading to more competitive pricing. This case underscores the EU's commitment to curbing monopolistic practices in the tech industry and could have far-reaching consequences for how digital marketplaces operate. Presenting the IT Pro Series with Benjamin Rockwell.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and how they all intertwine. And we talk about IT professionals on a regular basis. Why? Because I am one. And I will tell you, one of the things that I have touted about myself for a very long time. And when I say a long time, we're talking over 30 years ago. I explained to people that I am really good at translating techno babble into plain English. And I strive to do that on a regular basis. I know that there are people in the industry that really struggle with this. Hey, we're nerds. We can sit there and we can talk about microservices and containerization and scalability and all of this different stuff that goes into cloud infrastructure overhauls and things like that. And everybody sits there and goes, huh, what? So I have been doing this for a long time. I realize that anytime I slip into jargon, I slip into all of the language of the machine and everything like that, that I'm going to lose a lot of people. And that extends to things like acronyms and any of these different things where we slip into the technical language. And people who are outside of that field, they can get lost, whether we're talking about colleagues or clients or potential employers. And it doesn't matter. The tech guy can be the brightest bulb in the server room, but if nobody gets what he's saying, everybody's just going to be sitting there blinking in the dark because they don't understand what's going on. Now, there's a solution, and this solution works well all the way on down. And this is something that if you're a technical person, I want you to think about some of the different things I'm going to throw at you here. If you are in the business world and you have complex business topics to cover, you can use this as well. If you need to understand that person over there speaking the techno babble, that IT guru that's just amazingly brilliant, and he knows all of his stuff, but he doesn't know how to speak English, ask for these things from him. So let's just talk about how we can bring this information down to earth. You don't have to dumb it down. Just make it accessible. Big thing for me. I have always worked on developing analogies, metaphors, whatever you want to refer to this as. And instead of saying something out there, like one of the phrases is API, and this is easily translated like this. It's like the waiter that delivers food or data from the kitchen, the server, to your table or application. So we work on through that kind of concept there where we're relating this. I frequently will use restaurant or food analogies because everybody likes to eat. I use car analogies. I try to find different ways to bring that information over to people so that they understand exactly what's going on. I also try to swap out buzzwords for everyday language, sticking along the lines of what I've been talking about, all of this stuff in regards to the technical side, I'm going to say instead of using the term cloud storage, which people are starting to understand, it's a space up in the on the internet. I've got a different approach to this. We could say a giant online filing cabinet. That's everyday language. It's not that buzzword of cloud storage. And then last up, there's the idea of storytelling. And we can use storytelling in a number of ways to bring people towards us. We can ask them to tell us a story about how that illustrates whatever tech concept, whatever money concept, whatever business concept that's going on. If you don't understand this in any of these realms, just ask for it. Along those same lines, as I've been talking about this, you know, all of this cloud structure, infrastructure overhaul, I can use a story that illustrates exactly that. I could talk about how a friend lost all of their photos because they didn't back up to that online filing cabinet or iCloud, as we might all be familiar with, or one of these other services, to OneDrive, because people are starting to understand some of these different concepts. So you start bringing this all together and you break it down, get away from all of the different variations of jargon, techno babble, whatever you want to call it. Look, tech skills may open the door for a lot of people, but communication is what keeps those people in the room. Senior people, they may need to translate complex ideas down to non-technical stakeholders. Leadership, they may need to explain something about their vision. Otherwise, they're a shepherd without a flock. In sales and client relations, the best tech solutions sound like simple, relatable stories. All of this, you really need to think about your technical knowledge like a toolbox. You can wield the fanciest tools in the world, but if you can't explain to someone why they need a screwdriver instead of a hammer, you're just the person making a lot of noise. And you know what? Nobody remembers the noise. What do they remember? They remember the impact. That's how it works. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin. What then if your Windows 10 PC is not Windows 11 upgrade compliant? Microsoft reiterates that as of October the 14th, 2025, it will no longer provide technical support or security and reliability fixes for PCs running Windows 10. When a Windows version reaches its end of support date, the software keeps working, but the update channel grinds to a halt. There will be no new security updates, non-security updates, or assisted help. If you try to upgrade a non-compliant PC to Windows 11, you'll encounter an error message. What can you do? Well, let's look at what options you have. Do nothing. Yes, you can just do nothing. Just continue running your unsupported operating system and hope for the best. However, that's a bad idea, as that exposes you to the very real possibility that you'll fall prey to a security exploit. The risks are that there are no security updates and you are subjected to malware and exploits. This is not recommended. You can upgrade your incompatible PC to Windows 11 with available workarounds. You can edit the registry and enable TPM secure boot and using Rufus, that's R-U-F-U-S, to bypass installation checks, especially for legacy BIOS systems. The downside to this is you'll get a warning about unsupported status, but updates might still work unofficially. The upside is it keeps your current hardware running a modern operating system. For older PCs that were originally designed for Windows 7 or Windows 8.1, you might need to use a third-party tool called Rufus to bypass installation challenges. That's especially true on PCs that use a legacy BIOS instead of UEFI or UEFI firmware, and for those that don't have access to a TPM. Make sure you have the most recent version of Rufus 4.6 beta or later to ensure that you can work around Microsoft's latest compatibility check. If you don't want to mess with the registry and you're willing to do a clean install, just use Rufus to create a bootable Windows 11 installation drive, which bypasses the compatibility checker completely. You'll need to restore your data files, though, from a backup or from the cloud, and you'll also need to reinstall the software from scratch. But that's no more difficult than setting up a new PC. Another option is to use Windows 365 Cloud PC. This cloud-based Windows experience includes up to 3 years of extended security updates for your Windows 10 host. Not cheap, but possibly cheaper than new hardware. This is useful if you rely heavily on Microsoft Office or have cloud-compatible apps. You can also switch to a different operating system like Linux. You could use a Linux distro like Ubuntu, Bint, and then many others on your old computing equipment. It could be a good fit for tech-savvy users or those with simple computing needs. However, the challenge will be compatibility with Windows-specific applications. You can keep your old hardware and replace Windows 10 with the flavor of Linux you prefer. If you've got the technical know-how and experience to manage the transition, that option is worth considering. Switching to Linux or some derivative of Linux might be a good way to repurpose an old PC. Still, for most consumers and businesses with existing investments in Windows software, it is not a realistic alternative. Then there is the Google option with Chrome OS Flex. It is a lightweight, cloud-first OS from Google. It is free but also has compatibility lists and limitations. It may not be suitable for those relying on Windows apps. First, however, before you convert to Chrome OS Flex, check Google's certified models list before proceeding. You can also pay Microsoft for extended security updates. Microsoft offers paid security updates after October 2025. For the PC consumer, the cost is $30 for only the first year. This will buy you an extra year of support time. Great if you need a little more time before switching or upgrading. Then, finally, you can buy a new Windows 11 PC, which is the easiest but most expensive path. It is best for users without legacy software requirements. This saves hassle of compatibility tweaks. Buy a new PC and start the migration from Windows 10 to Windows 11. But throwing away a perfectly good computer seems wasteful, and it's not an option if you're hanging on to Windows 10 because you have mission-critical software that is incompatible with Windows 11. Buying a new Windows 11 PC may be a blessing, however, in disguise, as you would not have to deal with the anguish of being stressed out hoping that all will go well with an upgrade. As for applications that are not Windows 11 compliant, run Windows 10 in a sandbox or virtual machine under Windows 11. If only one or two apps require Windows 10, consider running a virtual machine VM on a new PC. Running Windows 10 in a sandbox environment for security helps isolate legacy software while keeping the main system secure. Look out for this Social Security scam that gives hackers full access to your computer. Do not download your statement from an email. If you received an email about your Social Security statement, proceed with caution. According to a new report from Malwarebytes Labs, hackers are impersonating the Social Security Administration to trick people into installing a remote access tool and handing over full control of their devices. The Social Security Administration is no stranger to phishing scams. The Office of the Inspector General put out an alert last month warning the public of fraudulent emails purporting to include Social Security statements that, in reality, led to fake websites. The current attack is the work of a phishing group known as Molitori. It begins with an email that appears to come from the Social Security Administration with the message, "Your Social Security statement is now available," and a prompt to download an attached copy of the document. The supposed statement is actually a Screen Connect client which grants remote control of the affected device. Screen Connect is a legitimate remote support platform for IT pros to help users configure systems and resolve technical issues by allowing the same access as if they had your device on hand. Once hackers have control of your computer via Screen Connect, they can use it for anything from installing malware to transferring files to accessing sensitive data, like bank and financial account information, all without your knowledge. Financial fraud is believed to be the main objective for this campaign, but as always, stolen data can be used for identity theft or sold to other malicious groups. This scheme is hard to identify in part because the phishing emails originate from compromised WordPress sites with legitimate domains. The email body may also be sent as an image rather than text, making it harder for filters to detect it as malicious. All of the common cautions for avoiding phishing scams apply here. Do not click on links or download or open files or attachments sent via email, especially if the message is unsolicited. Go directly to the company's or organization website to locate important documents and verify communication. Attacks that come from compromised but legitimate domains can be trickier to catch, so be especially wary of anything you're instructed to download, click, or fill out from an email. If you are unsure whether an email or message is real and safe, Malwarebytes also suggests copying some of the text into a search engine to determine if it is part of a known phishing campaign. What is a lifetime subscription? It may seem obvious once you hear it, but a lifetime subscription isn't necessarily how long you live. Essentially, you're paying a one-time fee to be able to use a service or unlock extra features for as long as that service exists. Paying for a lifetime subscription only for the service to shut down within a few months can happen. The new owners of VPN provider VPN Secure have drawn ire after canceling lifetime subscriptions. The owner told customers they didn't know about the lifetime subscriptions when they bought VPN Secure, and they cannot honor the purchases. VPN firm says it didn't know customers had lifetime subscriptions and they were canceled. They acknowledge that notifying users of the deactivation was a poor experience. In March, complaints started appearing online about lifetime subscriptions to VPN Secure no longer working. VPN Secure was acquired in 2023, including the technology, domain, and customer database, but not the liabilities. The firm claims to have known about the subscriptions a few months after taking ownership, so it had ample time to warn customers before abruptly deactivating dormant accounts and killing the subscriptions of thousands of customers. Unfortunately, the previous owner did not disclose that thousands of lifetime deals had been sold through platforms like Stack Social. The new owners discovered this only months later, when a large portion of their resources were strained by these LTD accounts and high support volume from users who, through part of the database, provided no sustaining income to help them improve and maintain the service. VPN Secure is offering affected users discounted new subscriptions for either $1.87 for a month instead of the $9.95 and $19 for a year instead of $79.92, or $55 for 3 years instead of $107.64. These deals are available until May 31st, so if you happen to be a subscriber, well, you can decide whether you want to continue or not. A VPN Secure representative claimed on the review site Trustpilot that the current owners did not gain access to the customer database until months after the acquisition. According to VPN Secure owners, their acquisition netted them the tech, the brand, and the infrastructure technology, but none of the company contracts, payments, or obligations from the previous owners. VPN Secure's ordeal is a reminder that so-called lifetime subscriptions often last shorter than advertised. Per comments online, VPN Secure's lifetime subscriptions lasted up to 20 years. Lifetime subscriptions, as well as lifetime warranties, can also get abruptly voided if a company goes out of business, as we've seen with VPN Secure. New owners could also jeopardize lifetime offerings. Users can also see capabilities reduced or altered in the course of a lifetime. The term limited lifetime subscription is an oxymoron at first glance. The term lifetime implies something lasting for the entire life of the user or the product, while limited suggests a restriction. It's a marketing gimmicky term more than a legal one, and it's intentionally vague. The contradiction is often used to sound generous while allowing wiggle room. Presenting Technology Chatter with Benjamin Rockwell and Marty Winston.
Marty Winston joins me now. Marty, what do you have for us this week?
Ben, you are familiar with the Dremel tools. You do dainty little work with them, and they're miniature.
Yeah, sometimes I exceed the level of delicate work that they're designed for, and I do get a little aggressive with them. But yeah, I use Dremel tools all the time.
Do you know who owns Dremel?
No, I don't.
It's Bosch, B-O-S-C-H.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah.
Now, nice. Bosch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bosch has always been a brand for some of the most macho hand-wielded tools that pros use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when I got in their new 18-volt brushless cutoff saw, I got to tell you, my excitement was tangible.
So this is like a Dremel tool, I'm guessing. It's a cutoff saw, so it's like a Dremel tool on some serious steroids. It's like
on steroids. It's from the planet Krypton.
Okay, all right.
For one thing, it uses the largest, heaviest batteries I've seen so far in a tool designed to be held in both hands.
Okay. In both hands. This is, so it's a serious tool.
It's,
okay.
Yeah. It fits 9-inch diameter diamond or abrasive cutting wheels.
Wow. Okay.
You can cut into concrete or steel to a depth of 3 1/3 inches with this.
Okay. And it's battery powered.
And it's battery powered.
All right.
And so well balanced. I can't begin to tell you.
Have you been slicing apart your driveway recently? What's the deal?
Thinking about the chimney got to go.
All right.
There's a wrench that tucks into a slot on the bottom of its rear handle for cutting wheel changes. Its no load speed is 6,200 RPM.
Nice. That's
more than 100 full spins per second, meaning with a 9-inch diameter blade, that's more than 240 feet of cutting wheel edge exposure every second.
Wow. Just wow. Right.
This is the most macho saw I've ever seen. There's a water hose inlet.
Okay.
Because with that much heat on the blade, you want to keep water running.
All right.
That cooling stream of water flows from the back through the front. And by the way, there's also an LED headlight up front.
All right.
So you're seeing what you're doing. And with all that heat, if there's something that may make you want to pause, you're going to see it twice. Once in the light and possibly once in what happens when the water's hitting that spot.
Yeah. Wow.
All right. Now, let's see. There are times you may want to pause or slow down or back off. The balance is great. When I first hit the trigger, I was thinking, I hope I have enough muscle left in my arm.
Yeah.
But there was no kick.
Okay.
Perfectly balanced, even with the thing spinning. I have to say, this is not for beginners or amateurs.
Sure.
You need to know what you're doing when you're cutting with this, because operator errors are the biggest cause of dangerous kickbacks.
Yeah.
And with a saw blade that can eat through those hard materials that quickly, there's nothing you can do that can stop it absolutely instantly. So if it kicks back toward you, hope your insurance is paid.
If it can cut through 3.5 inches of cement or steel, it's going to go through, we'll just say, softer things a lot faster.
Okay.
So it definitely be careful with it. All right.
Yeah. Now, to help make it easier for humans to use, there's a big rubbery block inside the battery compartment.
All right.
There's good rubber wraps on the front and rear insulated handles. Do wear pro-grade work gloves with this, not to mention pro-grade eye protection.
I would say hearing protection, too.
Yeah, it's not that loud. It's battery.
Yeah, but when you're cutting into cement.
Well, you get all the sonics and stuff. That's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Now, compared to other saws with this much power, this whole thing weighs less than 12 pounds with the battery out, so it is considered surprisingly lightweight. The Bosch 18-volt cutoff saw kit with two batteries and a charger are on Amazon for about $950.
Okay. All right. So this is some serious pro-grade equipment. This is for people who are doing demo work. They're doing your typical home builder kind of.
Right.
Professional home builder. I'm not saying, at a home builder. Yeah.
And then again, if you're used to high level power equipment, you might want to use it to put water ruts in your driveway.
To help
direct where the water goes when otherwise it would look like a river.
Sure. So, I
love Bosch stuff. This tool makes me feel male and human.
Superhuman, like a Superman, as you referenced earlier on. I get that. I do have some tools that are on the more aggressive side. Not a whole lot, because I actually personally hire in workers if they're going to do stuff like that. But the Dremel tool, that was cool hearing about them owning Dremel. So a new surprise for me. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin, and thank you, Marty. Public service announcements. Computer club meetings in the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut tri-state region. Log on to the club website for more information on remote meeting ID. The Brookdale Computer Users Group meets Thursday, May the 29th. Meeting time is 6:45 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Zoom. Website is bcug.com. TED Ed Connect meets Tuesday, June 3rd. Meeting time is 7 p.m. It will be a hybrid meeting. Meeting at the Scarsdale Public Library, located at 54 Olmsted Road in Scarsdale, New York, and they will have an online virtual meeting via Zoom. Website is wpcug.org. The Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey meets Friday, June the 6th. Meeting time is 8 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Jitsi. Website is acgnj.org. The King's Bight Computer Club meets Tuesday, June 10th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. at the Park Plaza Restaurant, located at 220 Cadman Plaza West in Brooklyn. Phone number to confirm is 347-278-7320. The New York Amateur Computer Club will be celebrating its 50th anniversary of its founding in June. Thursday, June 12th, meeting time at 7 p.m., and the meeting will be held at Studios 353, Rehearsal Studios and Halls, located at 353 West 48th Street, between 8th and 9th Avenues, on the second floor in Manhattan, New York. And the meeting will be also online. It's a virtual meeting via Zoom. The website is nyacc.org. The Long Island Macintosh Users Group will meet Friday, June 13th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Zoom. And the website is limac.org. Our website is pcradio.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN, live streaming on the Internet. Podcast of the program is available on prn.live on the Internet. If you have any questions for us, just send us an email addressed to hank@pcradioshow.org. In the meantime, stay in touch and remember to do regular backups. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Michael Horowitz, Benjamin Rockwell, and Marty Winston, we thank you for listening. Stay safe and healthy until we meet again, same time, same station, next week.